You're listening to Brazen Bookworm's Unrighteous Reading Rebellion, a reformed book snob's journey and musings through all things romance. Some language may not be safe for all ears. Frequent use of sarcasm may occur.
And we are here today. So super excited. I'm kind of a little fangirling at the moment. We've got Catherine Nolan with us, and
Hi.
She is like the sunshine of the romance community, and we're so excited to have her here with us today. We're talking all kinds of things, and so you guys know us. We're the Stalker Sisters, and Catherine's joining us today to talk about lots and lots and lots of things. But before we talk about all the things, one very quick question to get the ball rolling for you, Catherine, is if people who are just finding out about you that have been living under a rock somewhere, I don't understand that, but if they're just finding out about you or they haven't read you yet, how would you describe the books that you write for someone who's brand new to you? Where should they start? What should they expect? Tell us a little bit about you and your overall book world.
Okay, that's awesome. Well, my name is Catherine Nolan. For folks who don't know me, I'm from Philly. I'm like a super chaotic bisexual. I'm a big bookworm. I have a rescue dog named Walter that I talk about all the time. And I've been married to my husband. I just forgot. I was about to say for some amount of time. Sorry. I've been with my husband for like 13 and a half years and married for some amount of time within that. I can never do the math. But we met when I was living in California, and then we kind of lived in a camper van for a while and traveled across the country and came back to Philadelphia. And so I mentioned that because, you know, traveling and, you know, outdoor adventures and things like that are usually a really big part of my books. Like, I love to have like really beautiful, like natural environments, or have the places where the couples are living feel like a really big part of the story. But I write steamy contemporary romance, and I also write romantic suspense and mystery. For folks kind of wondering what my books are about, I would say, like, you know, I'm really, really into sexual tension. I think my sex scenes are pretty steamy, but I personally really live for all the charged moments, like leading up to that. Like, I would much rather write a scene where like the one character just like touches the other character's wrist for like one single second. I would just write that forever. To me, that's like, that's the money. That's like the money spot for me. And so I love sexual tension. I love banter. I think I would say my stories are pretty hopeful. You know, there's definitely sometimes some angst, but I think in general, they are on like the lighter side, the funner, they're fun. They have some silly moments too, but I think they usually have pretty like hopeful, happy endings. And like, community is really important to me. You know, before I was a romance author, I worked in the field of homelessness for a long time. And so, like, you know, social justice, human rights is important to me, and community building, especially as a queer person, you know, like your whole world is made better by the queer community that uplifts you, that supports you. And so I think, like, you know, found family, like learning to take care of one another, these are kind of like the more common themes in my book. So my mom and my dad are always like, I'm hustling my books out to strangers. My mom always goes, she always says, they're romance novels, but with a powerful message. So which is a very cute way to describe them.
But it's so true.
It's so accurate.
Yeah. My parents are like my number one. My parents are always like showing people my Amazon page. It's so cute.
I love that.
That's great.
Yeah. So that's kind of a long and winding answer to your question.
No, it's the perfect answer because it gives a lot of information. And I, you know, it's funny because we do some notes beforehand and we chat beforehand. And one of the questions that we like to answer is how we found the author we're talking to. And like a favorite book or a first book. And I don't think any of us have like the same answers, which is so cool. So for me, I found you through Blue Water Billionaires. I had read Claire and then I read Bootleg. So I found Lucy. And then I was like, wait a minute, there's a book. There's like four books. And I was just like over the moon. So then I was like, okay. So then I found Blue Water Billionaires and I read all of those. And then I went and binged your books, starting with Out of the Blue.
That's the
surfer one, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Bodyguard.
And okay, so this is, I remembered this the other day when I was thinking about different books and stuff. And I think your group was the first group I ever actually posted in, like as a reader, because Out of the Blue hit me so hard about If you haven't read Out of the Blue, it is a powerful message about sports and how women struggle to gain the same levels of notice, pay, respect as men doing the same exact sport. And I post it because, as a female martial artist,
Hell yeah.
I see this on the daily. Like, I teach in an all-female dojo, and my students are all girls, and we compete and judge. And every tournament I go to, I see the difference in how the men and the boy competitors are treated versus the female competitors. And when I read Out of the Blue, I was like, if this isn't a book that speaks to my heart, I was like, this is like the everything of it was banter and angst and flirty and hot. And then there was this message, like you said, this message of social justice and reality and acceptance and being seen. And I was like, okay, this is an author. I have to read everything. And then I did. I binged the crap out of everything because I thought, I need it all.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that. I
Because
love that
the message
story
is
so
so strong. So, and then
Oh
Rival
my
Radio
gosh.
is my favorite. So, and Out of the Blue. Those two are my
Hell
favorites.
yeah.
Love them both. But this Rival Radio is really, really special to me. It just hit really hard when I read that one, that love story. So, and it's a complete standalone. So if you're looking for standalones, that's a perfect one.
Yeah, I
So
would
yeah.
recommend that to readers where it's like if they're like, what's your vibe like? I'm always like, oh, Rival Radio kind of has all of it. You know, it's got like a community, kind of like a funky radio station, a like funny mentor, competition, like hot sex during a paintball tournament, you know,
That
beyond
was so
the
great. That was so great. And the
usuals.
creativity that goes behind your books is just fantastic. So definitely love that about it. So that's me. Ron, just because I'm going around the screen. So what about
Okay.
you?
Somebody asked me this before, and I thought that it was Blue Water, but it really wasn't because I went back through my Kindle and I have sexy shorts on my Kindle. So that was the first
Hilarious.
one. And I think that probably I thought it was Blue Water because there was a little bit of brain disconnect between the sexy shorts book and the Blue Water, but I love them all. I absolutely love them all. Off the Mark is probably like my second favorite ever.
That's my heart book.
But Bohemian owns me.
Oh, also my heart book.
It owns me. Anytime a bookstore becomes a character in a story, you own me. It's just
I know, because I
that's
feel like
how I am.
as a bookworms, like all of us, like if you're like, what did you want to be as a kid? It's always like own a bookstore, duh. Like, and like not like a not one that does well, like one that's kind of empty and like kind of has like a cat and it's kind of dusty.
Yes.
You know, I don't want to be, I
Yeah.
don't want to work. I just want to like be in it.
And read all day.
Hell yeah.
You want to be like Belle from Beauty and the Beast.
Yes.
You want to be
We
like
all want to be Belle. You're right. You're right.
It's
So, Julie, what about you?
I have no idea. I don't remember where I started, but I can tell you it's my favorite. It's my
Yeah,
favorite cover. It's my favorite book. It's so good.
The vibe on that cover is just incredible.
Anyway, yes. I
Love
don't have
that
an
cover.
answer.
Oh, so good.
Susie,
Who
what
has
about you?
that photo?
Out of the Blue was my first, but and then Off the Mark was the I only read two of hers, so Out of the Blue and Off the Mark.
I'll write on two good ones.
I was gonna say, if there's two that you're gonna read, those are two that are, yeah, solid and strong, and you can really dive into.
Bohemian is on my TBR, but
Oh, that's a
we all
fun
know
one.
how that works with TBRs.
The ever-growing TBRs that will outlive all of us.
Yes, that's
Is
why mine
Out of
is.
the Blue on audio? Okay, well,
It is not a
I
ball,
guess
yeah.
that's my next audiobook.
It's a fun one because it's suspense, so I think the audio is like kind of fun.
Yes. Yeah, I need to pull that one out again and listen to it because it is one of, like I said, it's one of my favorites, and you know how I am with audiobooks. So I'm going to be on a plane soon, so
Oh, nice.
I'll need something for the plane. And I keep looking behind me. Maggie is
You're a
wandering this
mascot.
morning. So Maggie is just, fair warning, if she starts to bark, I will try and mute very quickly. But she has been every leaf that blows. I was saying it's deer farts and squirrel burps this morning. I don't know what is attracting her outside, but the herd is out there, so she's going to notice them. And it's funny because I always see your pictures of Walter, mm-hmm. and Maggie is like Walter, just like 10 times the size.
But like big.
Yes. So I see like the little donut pictures of him, like the sleepy fox curled up.
Oh, yeah.
That's Maggie, but like shrunk. So
yeah, that's so sweet. Oh my gosh, I love to see
her face in here eventually, but she's wandering
today for some reason.
So if she starts to bark, I will try to mute. But anyway, okay. So one of the things we really wanted to talk to you about was events, because you came back from Rare. So we're going to jump right in.
Yeah, go for it.
Now that we just talked about some books with that experience.
Mm-hmm. So
Julie, you're up.
Rare. You just came back. Tell us about it.
It was really fun. Well, I brought Rob as my assistant, because usually my best friend Faith is my assistant, but like a lot of folks who do Rare, we use it as an opportunity to go on vacation to Italy. And Rob was saying when he was there, he could see like all the husbands, like every author had like her husband there as like the assistant. So I was really excited because he doesn't really get a chance to, he only sees the behind the scenes of being an author, which is not super glamorous. And so I was like really excited to have him see like the excitement that the readers get. Like it is hard to kind of describe unless you're there, like how powerful it is. Like, I mean, even when we like walked in, he was like, wow, like the line goes all the way down the street. And it's like, yeah, folks like wait for a long time. I got to be next to one of my favorite people, Maria Lewis, and her husband. And we also got to go out to eat in Rome. And we ordered too much wine and we got super drunk. So it was a very fun thing for all of us. And I like kind of loudly told her husband, like plot scene by scene, everything that happens in Katie Roberts is gifting me to his best friend, which I think is the best book ever written. If anyone has not read it, you need to read it immediately. It's exact, the plot is what the title is. She's gifted to her husband's best friend. And so I just like kind of like drunkenly said this in like a Roman restaurant. So that was really the vibe of Rare. It was like pretty, fun. It was pretty unhinged. I didn't think that anyone would come to my table because I don't usually have, I don't know a lot of like international folks yet, but a lot of folks did, and it was nice to have people. It was like really fun to have people I'd never met be like, you don't know me, I'm from Spain, but I've been reading you since Bohemian, okay, bye. And I was like, oh wow, that's really cool, I never would have like known some of these things if I didn't get a chance to go. So I really liked it. I was super nervous. I think Tim and I were nervous to like ship my books over. When it's like overseas, there's like so many more things that can happen. Mm-hmm. Authors were definitely like, my books are stuck in customs. And I was like, I don't know what's going to happen if that happens, but what can you do?
Was it the first time you've ever done an international event?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, the very first one. Yeah, I was excited. And like the morning of, Rob was like, we were getting ready. And I was like super nervous and like trying to, get a handle on things. And he was like, oh, can you imagine, like, you're telling your 16-year-old self, like, oh, you're going to, like, an international book signing. Sounds so cool when you say it.
It is cool.
It is. And it's easy in this job, like, because, usually you hang out with other readers and other authors. The kind of, like, the beauty and the highlights of this job can get buried sometimes because it's like, oh, I got to write another book. Oh, I have another book release, or, like, whatever. And then when you talk to folks who aren't in the community, they're like, a book release? You wrote a novel? You went overseas? But you're kind of like, it's like your day to day. And so it's easy to lose the shine. So it's like, I think it's really important to like remember how cool this job is. I mean, it's the coolest job you have. So
it is a cool job. I feel like I have a cool job and I'm not an author. So
yes.
I mean, look at us. We're on a podcast right now.
I know. Talking about romance.
Right. That's right. It is easy to get stuck in the minutia. It's easy to get stuck in the numbers. It's easy to get stuck in word counts and ranks and even invitations, to do things and lose track and lose sight of the why.
Yes.
I think that's from the events that I've been to. That is, it's the restoring the vibe. It's restoring the why. It's the reminder of, these people are here to see you. We come to events to see you. We stand in line to see you for a 30-second, photo, sign my book, grab a hug, and then go. But it's that connection of this is a person I've seen online. This is a person whose books have touched my heart and my soul, mm-hmm. have made me laugh and cry, have made me turn red in the carpool line, pull off the road to laugh. You know, yes. These are the people who, you know, for me, and I know I've said this 100 times, but I'll say it again. When COVID started, I hadn't read a single romance novel before March of 2020. So,
Are you serious? I never would have guessed that of you.
My first romance novel I read, I started on March 14th, 2020. This was the first romance novel, right? Uh-huh. So I have trouble remembering that too. And I haven't read anything but romance since then, mm-hmm. because it was such an eye-opening awakening for me of there is this entire world and community out there. And it's not, I'm not reading about sex. I can open a textbook and read about sex. That's right. Not what romance is. And that's not right. What the community is built around. And mm-hmm. it saved me. It literally saved me during COVID and has become the biggest part of my life since. And I don't mind standing in line for hours.
Right. And
mm-hmm. 30 seconds with someone who changed my life.
Yes. You know? Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I hope, you know, and I know that you guys do because I hear it, you've said it, and I've heard it from others that that's what brings back the happy. That's mm-hmm. what brings back the purpose and the why, because you can get stuck in so many things. Mm-hmm. It's kind of fun sometimes to get stuck in the yay of the,
yes.
the
experience. Yeah. So, and the power of the like power what of stories, it. Like what good stories do, that the fact that like we're all born storytellers, human beings have been telling stories since the dawn of time in different ways. And that like there's such a beauty to being part of a community of storytellers and like what yes. good stories do, which is like transport us, like help us escape, help us experience other lives, help us empathize with people who are not like us. It just like yeah. it's like a drug, you know. It's magical.
It is, and it brings people together. It brings mm-hmm. community. I mean, definitely. I didn't know any of the people on this screen.
That's so wild.
Before March of 2020.
Oh, I love that.
It's
maybe even later than that.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to think. It's like I started reading in March of 2020, so I don't even think I started reaching out to people in the community until it would have been at earliest Christmas of that year.
Right, that's why.
And because I was a lurker. Yeah. Big time on pages and groups, just kind of getting the vibe and figuring out where I fit and where sure. I didn't. Mm-hmm. And there were places I left and there were places I joined. And mm-hmm. there's a lot to be said about finding your community.
You adopted me.
So we adopt, yes.
It's life changing. Mm-hmm. Life changing. Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, I did a post in one of the groups I help run, and it's gotten so much feedback. And it's about, you know, just these groups, you know, there's an openness within them. Mm-hmm. You know, basically the post was, you know, whatever trial you've been through, it's so that you can help someone else. And I feel like right. so many people in these reader groups. And in books, I've said this multiple times, uh-huh. I've found healing mm-hmm. for certain things that's happened in my life through romance books. But the reader groups themselves, you know, just like Michelle and Susie and Ron and I, you know, we have a connection, and it's because of you. Mm-hmm. It's because of all the authors that open up their worlds to us. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of safety in it for a lot of people.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, safety is a good way to put it. It's like a soft place to land.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. It's acceptance and understanding mm-hmm. and non-judgment. Yes. And yes. And okay, mm-hmm. I'm not, you know, there's always judgment. People are going to judge. I know mm-hmm. there's judgy people out there no matter what. But it's knowing also for me that when that happens, that there are people who get it and who support. Yeah. So I love that. Julie, you had one other question about rare. Did we answer that one?
Yeah, we did. She okay. just, you know, we talked about how the differences between a U.S. book event compared to an international, and just the logistics of it.
It's nerve-wracking.
Oh, I can imagine. It's nerve-wracking.
Yeah, because when I was like packing my suitcase, I was like, oh shit, I have to like pack like all my like markers, all like just like the things that usually I would just like, because I always only usually do signings here in Philadelphia. So like Faith shows up, I got my bags, we like take a lift up to the convention center, and I'm like, we're here. doing the one in California was really hard for me because I was also by myself. And so just trying to be like, okay, like, what do I bring? How do I do my square? Like, what if someone gives me cash? I don't know math, you know? It's like, what if someone gives me like a 20 and I don't have like change? Like I like walked up and down the strip to like all the CVSs to get like dollar bills from like the nicest folks, being like, hi, I'm a romance author. I need change for my table. Can you please give me change? Because usually Faith would like bring change. You know, I just was like really, you know, on my own. And so I think that that really helped me remember like just how many logistics it is. Yes. And then the first reader will like show up and be like, here's my card. And you're like, oh my God, my card reader is out of batteries. I never charge my card reader. You know, so it's like nonstop.
Oh my gosh.
What I want to say, thank you for spreading your wings and going outside of Philly for signing and coming to turn.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
Yes, I'm super excited. I'm really excited to see you guys.
We are too. Yeah. Trust me. Then that was a happy dance day when we were talking about that, because again, we find connections with people, and for us, Charm City Romantic Con's always been about connections. When we were creating what we did this year going forward, it's small, it's intimate, it's about connections, and we really were like, okay, we want the people there that we feel connected to,
yes,
and you know, and to build connections between those people. And when we were, I'm trying to remember, it was LJ. Ouch. LJ, she's such
a little instigator. LJ.
she sent me a message and she says, she's like, I hope it's okay. And I was like,
okay.
That doesn't always go right. Well.
She's like, that's I how I start okay. too.
But right. I hope it's okay. But I kind of put a bug in Catherine's ear about Charm City Romantic Con for next year. And I was like, are you kidding me? Of course it's okay. Thank you. Because we were like, okay. How are we going to miss connections again, making right. connections? Mm-hmm. And then I will fully admit when you were like, oh yeah, I'd love to be there. I may have screamed. I may have done a full happy dance in the family room. I may have messaged the rest of the group who also did happy dances. We're super excited and thankful that you're leaving Philly to come to Baltimore.
Oh, I love it. Well, I'm not sure if you guys know, but you know, I went to college in Maryland. I went to college along the Eastern Shore, and all of my best friends live in Baltimore. And so for me, it's a very special place to me.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My best friend lives in the county and my other best friend lives in the city, kind of like right on the line. And all my friends, you know, were from Harford County, Montgomery County, Gaithersburg, all those places when I was going to college. And so for me, when you said it was in Ellicott City, I was like, oh, I know Ellicott City. I was like, awesome. I can get there.
Nobody knows Ellicott City unless you're from here. They're like,
right. Mm-hmm.
What?
Right. Where? Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So,
I love Maryland. I'm a Maryland girl at heart. So
good.
Super excited. That,
really thankful.
Makes me even more happy.
Oh, hell yeah.
So I know we're like getting like, I told you, no rails.
Off the lift. Yeah.
Way off the rails. But trying to get back to the rails a little bit. Talking about the events and talking about writing. So Susie's got some really great questions about writing and styles and things. So you're up, Susie.
When did you start writing and why?
So like a lot of writers, I started writing as a little kid. In the early days, I wrote a lot of Star Wars fan fiction because I was really into Star Wars as a kid, and I was really bummed out that Luke and Leia were brother and sister. Just spoiler, in case anyone's never seen Star Wars 45 years later. I mean, now, obviously, as an adult, I'm, like, totally into Han Solo, but as a kid, I was like, ooh, I like Luke, he's nice. So I used to write in my, like, journal about them, and then when I was older, it's because I wanted to see Mulder and Scully kiss. Like, good God, I just wanted to see Mulder and Scully kiss so bad. I'm an X-Files girly from, like, the 90s. And so like the X-Files really taught me about like sexual tension and like prolonging and like what it's like to like work together to like solve a case, like the kind of intimacy that comes from like doing tasks together. So I wrote a lot of poetry. I wrote a lot of novels when I was a kid. Famously, as I've spoken about, I wrote a soap opera called All My Students, which was about a middle school soap opera. And it was like written in the vein of like letters. So there was like adultery, there was cheating. There was like back child support. There was like a lot of stuff that happened in this. And also it's so funny because I think I read this in my reader group one time, but like, I think in middle school, I thought that if you committed adultery, you went to jail because one of the dads was like, I can't admit what I've done and go to prison. Like I think I I think I thought if you cheated that you, like, the cops came and arrested you.
Probably a good thing it doesn't.
Oh, right.
How many men would be in jail? You know what I mean?
Talk about prison overcrowding.
So I loved writing stories. Then I really got into journalism. So I wrote a lot of articles. I was on my high school paper and my college paper. My college paper, I ran like the opinion section and I was like an editor. So I wrote a ton of stuff. And when I went to college, I won a creative writing scholarship, one of the creative writing scholarships. And so it was always really a big part of my life. But then like a lot of people, I dropped it. So, I mean, it still was a part of my life because I was a fundraiser for 8 years, you know, working in community work. So I was, you know, I was writing appeal letters, I was writing newsletters, I was doing persuasive writing all the time, but it's not the same as what I do now. It's not as creative. So.
And how
many people do that? They go through that where it's like, I'm a writer, and then society tells us you'll never make a living as a writer. Find a real job.
Yes.
And then you do something else.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That makes
yeah.
It so sad.
Yeah. I let it go for a long time. Rob and I were together for years and I was like on an old laptop and he was like, what is that stuff? And I was like, oh, my writing. And he was like, what writing? And I was like, I was like a writer for like my whole life. And it was like the only thing I cared about, but like, whatever. I was like, oh, it's like not a big deal. Just like a part of my soul. And I like let it die.
God, the English teacher in me is like, you know, cringes every time I hear someone say, oh, writing wasn't important, or you can't make a living at writing or whatever. And I'm like, oh, that hurts my soul so much. But you're right. It's such a big part of a lot of authors' paths to have been writing their whole life and then they stop.
They stop. Yeah. Because it's you know, you're kind of told, or also, you know, I was in like some writing critique classes when I was young. So like at college, because I would got on that scholarship, I was taking like poetry classes and things like that. And so you're young, you're like 18 versus now getting critiques, getting feedback is like part of my life. But at 18, you know, you're reading poetry to a group of people, you're getting your first critical feedback. I did not take it very well. And so I think I was kind of like, oh, this is too hard. I thought it was just like writing Mulder and Scully fan fiction. I didn't know it was like people telling me I was shitty at writing poetry.
Right? And people are awful to other people, like rude and insensitive. And, you know, there's a way to give criticism and then there's a way to like tear someone apart. And
oh, yeah. You shouldn't let 18-year-olds do it. Like, they don't even have a frontal lobe. So it's like, well, I don't know why you're letting them do it.
Right?
Yeah.
That's so valid. I can't tell you how valid that is. And how I used to cringe as a teacher when we would be like, oh, you have to have them do peer reviews. And I would be like, oh, no, I don't want them doing peer reviews because they're not nice to each other. And
no.
Oh, mm-mm. God, that's awful. But
yeah. It's horrible. What? It's like, oh, dear Lisa, maybe if you weren't such a bitch in the lunchroom, your poem would be better. Like, that's the
kind of thing. Yes. God. People are awful really sometimes.
Good. Yeah, I did. One thing I would recommend to folks who are getting back into it is I did these writing groups for a while called AWA style writing groups, which is like the Amherst Writers Association. And so you go, you're given prompts, which is really helpful when you're getting back into writing. So they'll be like, here's a newspaper article. Here's a song to listen to. Here's an interesting thing to think about. And then you can read back to the group, but you can only give positive feedback because you've just written it. So it's always like, you just wrote this. You don't need critical feedback. And so that was really helped me with my confidence and also kind of get the juices flowing.
I love that.
It's really powerful.
I love that so much.
Yeah, totally recommend.
So we'll put.
I'm gonna have to find a link for that. Susie, what was it? You had another.
That goes to my next question. How did writing change your life?
I think it really saved my life. I had given it up, and I was, you know, working in homelessness for, you know, 8 years, and fundraising is a really challenging job. Like, a lot of fundraisers leave after like 18 months or 2 years. And so I was like the director at a small nonprofit in Sacramento, a director of development at a small nonprofit. And so, you know, I was young, it was a lot of work. You know, we were on site with women and children every day, and it was not the women and children that burned me out. It was, you know, in the beginning when you have to explain to people like why you should care about unhoused people, like their kind of ignorance, it's a little easier to be like, oh, you know, they're coming from a good place, or like they mean well. And I could always get past it because part of my job was community education, which I really care about. The longer you do it, the less empathy you have for the fact that many people in our communities just do not care about people who don't have homes and do not care and blame them. And I found that attitude to be so demoralizing and so frankly horrifying and abhorrent that like the longer I did it and the longer I had to like talk to rich people about why every human being deserves a safe place to live, regardless of who they are as a person. You know, I was like, just because you're rich doesn't mean you're a good person, you know? So like you have a house. I don't know. It was really, really hard for me to like bridge that gap and like have to explain over and over again, like what a human being is. It really wore me down to the point where like the last couple of years, if I was like giving tours or things like that, I would actually get like almost like too emotional. If someone wanted to know how one of our students was doing and if I knew that she wasn't doing well anymore, like it was really hard for me to overcome like sharing that story. And so I knew that it was, you know, time for me to leave. And I was like really dreading. It was like that kind of job where I would like sit in my car in the parking lot. And like, you know, when you just like, don't want to go in.
Yeah.
Every day I dreaded it. Every night I dreaded it. Every morning I was like getting sick. You know, it was just really, really bad. And so I started writing again. And this is around the time that Rob and I were going to move into the van. And, you know, Faith kind of floated this idea. She was like, well, what if you started to like self-publish or tried to like meet people like that way with your writing? And that is absolutely how I joined the community, by like publishing my first novella, like just completely on my own, like knowing nothing. And that was in September 2016. And I like was just turning 30. I like told all my, I like came out to my friends and family as like a smut writer. I like sent people this like novella. Oh my gosh, like all of Rob's friends read it. Oh my, like thinking about it, like it's kind of one of those things where you're like, there is no shortcut. So like in the beginning, you have to be like, hi, do you want to read my weird stuff? I don't know what I'm doing. This is the most vulnerable I've ever been. Have fun. Don't tell me about it if you didn't like it. So like it was really like the hardest thing I ever did, but there was no other option because I was drowning. There was no way I was going to climb out of it. Because at that point, it wasn't that I like didn't believe in ending homelessness anymore. It was that I like didn't believe in my ability to be, I was like becoming that person at work who was like, oh, that idea is bad. That's not going to work. We tried that before. Like as a leader in the organization, like your job is to inspire, not to like bring people down. And I felt like I was now the person at the meetings who was like bringing people down, if that kind of makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I had, you know, I had a mentor when I was younger who was like, leaders are meant to change jobs, you know? And so like, if you're starting to feel that way, it's time for a new leader to take place. Yes. And so I had to kind of fade into the background / run away as fast as I could, because I knew it was time. And the first couple of weeks when we lived in the van, my mental health was so different that I knew that it was the thing that really, that writing basically like saved my life. So it was like a really, really hard time for me. And so like, I like remember one time I was at Target, like looking at notebooks to like do writing. And I turned to Rob and I was like, what if I didn't do it? Like, what if I had never done this? And like my whole life, I just like lived a life where I was like stressed out and upset all the time. Mm-mm. Versus this life that's like beautiful. It's like so scary. It's like that Gwyneth Paltrow Sliding Doors movie. I was like,
just thinking that. Yes. Yes.
It's my Sliding Doors moment. Yeah. That's how I feel about it. So
I think a lot of us have those. I think most people have those at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Those Sliding Doors moments. And I think that the most miserable people are the ones who never have it.
Yes, they just
take
stay.
Advantage of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they just stay and they sit. And that's not to say that everybody has to change jobs every so often to be happy, because I know people who have been in jobs for 30 and 40 years and love what they do.
Yes.
And they're perfectly happy there and they're great. But like you said, there's sometimes a point where you're like, I'm miserable.
Yes.
And I love that going back to what made you happy was what saved you.
Mm-hmm.
From that.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and it's also like you know, the power of storytelling. So like part of what I did in my old job was to help women who were experiencing homelessness like share their stories, because it's really hard, and they didn't need my help to share it. It was basically like opening the doors to get them into the rooms where they could share it with people who could give, because they were already very powerful storytellers. I just, you know, helped get the door open for them. But it was, it's like stories is what stories change our minds. Stories bring us empathy. Stories help us realize how someone's related to us and how we can like find common grounds. And so it is, I mean, it's like a common theme, right? Like just because I write romance novels, it's not, it's still like that same kind of idea that, that I think stories change the world. So I think it's a really cool thing to think about.
I agree. I come from the healing industry. Mm-hmm. And storytelling is the core of healing, is being able to mm-hmm. own your story. It gives you the permission to change your story.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, yes. So being able to come to that place where you can give words to the feeling, mm-hmm. gives you an opportunity to reach out for the help that you need. And I can see that your writing changed your life. Mm-hmm. How has your writing changed?
Oh, that's a good, well, it's no longer the quality of all my students. I think it's gone down in quality. I think it's gone down in quality, quite frankly. So I feel like I've learned so much. So like with each book, I work with a lot of different editors and beta readers and stuff. So I have like two developmental editors, and then I have a handful of beta readers and also copy editors and line editors. And like each time, you are like reaching for something different, where it's like each book of mine has had something dramatically wrong for it with it, where it's like, oh, and Wild Open Hearts, Luna and Beck, like the first couple drafts, they liked each other too much. They trusted each other too easily. Mm-hmm. And I remember Faith in particular being like, there's so much power between them. There's money issues. Like, you know, like this is something, it's uncomfortable, but you have to like have them like tackle it. Like I never had them have any tough conversations, because I was like, he's so cute, she's so cute. Oh, look at them being cute. You know, that was like a big one. So famously, when I wrote Behind the Veil, I'd never written suspense. And like what I gave Faith was essentially like a contemporary romance novel with like a bit of mystery in the background. Like, like Delilah and Henry were going on brunch dates. Like it was not like action. There was no like pacing. And quite famously, I had to burn that one to the ground and start over two separate times because it was so wrong. That was my first time calling Tim crying and being like, I don't think I can turn it in because it's bad. You know? He was like, what? He was like, yeah, you don't have to turn it in. And I was like, okay. And that was one of the hardest edits I ever had to do, because that was like an edit that was like, hey babe, you actually don't know what you're doing. Because I was like, I've written like four books, so I'm pretty sure I don't need any edits anymore. which is not true. All of my books have been garbage in the beginning. That's just part of the process. So each one has taught me something about like pacing or conflict, or how you layer in themes, because each of my books has had like a little special thing that was like purposely really, really, really shitty, and multiple editors had to be like, this is horrible, you have to fix it. So each time it's painful, and each time you have to really like sit with yourself. And I always get really mad when I get the edits. Like I usually get really mad. I like stomp around a little bit. I like don't talk to anyone for a day. I'm like, feel really pissy about it. You know, Rob's always like, oh, how'd it go? And I'm always like, oh, I don't know. I'm terrible. That's how it went. You know, and I like kind of like stomp around.
So you're just like every other author I know.
Uh-huh. It's like, this is a personal attack on me. And then like, I get a good night's sleep. And in the morning, I'm like, oh shit, that's right. That's it. That was what was missing. Yeah. So, because you know, a lot of times that there's something wrong and you just need someone to be like, oh, the beginning's off. You don't have the right tension at 15% or whatever. And it's like, oh shit, so, that's right.
So you're basically doing the same job you used to do, just a different forum.
Yes, 100%. Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. So I think it's changed in that way where like, but then like each time it's like you're almost reaching, like each book you're reaching for like something that's like, it's like exponential. And so like each time is like, feels every book is harder because you're reaching for a growth that is exponential. So it's painful. It's extremely painful.
I hope that every aspiring author, every new author, and every experienced author who watches this understands how powerful what you just said truly is. Because I have heard from the editor side of things, I have heard
experienced authors who I don't edit for, who I'm just friends with.
Sure, sure, sure.
Say, I don't understand. I've been doing this for so long. I have written 20 books. I don't know why I'm still making the same mistakes. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why I'm still getting so much redlining. I've had new authors who I do work with say, I can't do this. Maybe I'm not supposed to be an author. I thought this was going to be different. And it's like, no, you are doing exactly what you should be doing as an author. And this is why
this is the work. Growth. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
It's a growth process. If your books, if your writing doesn't change, doesn't improve, mm-hmm. doesn't evolve, then you're doing it wrong.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Because writing doesn't live in a place of stasis. It lives in a place of growth. And thank you for saying all of that, because I know that there are readers and writers who are out there who are thinking that they're shit because they got edits back and they were told they had to change things or they had to burn it to the ground and start again. Because if you want to write romantic suspense, you just wrote a folktale. You know, it's 100%. Just, you have to, you know.
Because how can you know what you don't know what you don't know, you know, like a lot of it's like kindness to yourself, where it's like, how could I never written a romantic suspense before? Like how, it's like I could like go out and run a 4-minute mile without ever practicing, you know?
Right, so. Exactly. God, that's so true. That's such a great analogy too.
I mean, I don't feel that way. Like, yeah, I'm going to send this draft I'm working on now off to Faith and Jess, and I'm going to be like, they're going to hate it because secretly they hate me and they've hated me this whole time.
I get those messages.
Yeah. Should live in the trash can. I'm always like, I'm going to go live in the trash can because I'm a garbage person.
The Oscar so the Grouch.
Bad. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right.
It is really hard though, because I think it's like all writing is rewriting. So like if you're not willing to do that work, unfortunately, it's like that's actually what the job is, which is like it's horrible. It's so hard. It's tedious. It is painful. It is the most exhausting job, but that's kind of what it is, you know.
Well, it's mentally, spiritually, physically, and emotionally exhausting. Because no matter what part of the process you're in, there's something else that's going to drag, pull, push, explode. And
it's exhausting.
Oh, it's like, oh, I have to change this scene in chapter 21, which means I have to like delicately thread the needle of a slightly different backstory theme from chapter 1 through chapter 21, but then make it match at the end. So actually I have to go back through every chapter and change 4 sentences that also might make another 4 sentences change, which also makes another domino effect of another plot point change. And now, fuck, I have to go back and rewrite the whole book. That's it.
Yes.
That it's horrible. Why don't we do it?
It's so brutally accurate.
Because we love you, Catherine. Yes. You do it because we love you.
And I love it. It is like finishing a marathon in that way where you're like, oh, I deserve a treat.
Speaking of treats, what are your favorite snacks when you're writing?
Oh, I don't really have a lot of snacks when I'm writing. I usually have coffee, water, tea. As a bisexual, it's mandatory that we have at least 3 drinks available at all times. So I usually have like a bubbly drink of like water and then coffee or tea. And then I just like routinely spill them constantly. So,
yeah. I think that's a theme. It happened. That's a true story.
I have my 3 drinks and I spill them on my laptop constantly.
Yeah, about
now,
that.
You said you shared an office with Rob. Is that your favorite place to write, or is that just where you end up?
Yeah, this is our office. So he's like, he's downstairs since I told him I'd be distracting, but he's kind of like where that screen is. He's on the other side. So during the pandemic, this is what we ended up taking our guest bedroom. You know, we have a pretty small row home, so it's cozy. I don't know. You know, it's always been kind of like utilitarian, like where I write, you know, cause we'll be on the road a lot. So I just kind of write on a couch or in a coffee shop, in the van. I used to write in the passenger seat in a sleeping bag in the morning, cause it was so cold. So I would sit in my sleeping bag with my gloves on and I would work on Bohemian. So if I've never had a place where it was like I do really like my desk. Rob is a woodworker and he built me a writing desk, which is really sweet. So this is a new writing desk that Rob built me. So I do like writing here, but it does feel like it's always been like with a lot of writers, like wherever you're getting it done is where you're getting it done. So I've kind of written all over. Actually, being on the road is really helpful for me because per Becca Syme, my main strengths things are all like new and different. And so being on the road helps my creativity. So if I can go to a coffee shop I've never been to before in a town I've never seen, I usually write the best in those places. So I have to get out of here from time to time because it's too isolating.
I give you credit for being able to write in the passenger seat. We're moving and I've spent a lot of time in the passenger seat the last month and I haven't accomplished a thing.
It's hard. I'm like, it's so hard. It's so hard.
I knit in the passenger seat because one, I can't read in the car. So John's always like, well, we're going to be on the road for 13 hours. You can get a lot of editing done. And I'm like, have you met me?
Yeah.
We've been together for 33 years. Have you met me? I can't do that. So I knit because otherwise I yell at people. He always says, I knit so I don't kill people. Because the passenger seat is one of those, it's like you can look out and see the world and yell at the person in the car next to you doing something stupid, or you can focus on what's exactly in front of you. Yeah, I give you a lot of credit for being able to write in the car because
that's a lot.
It's tough. Yeah. Living in the van had a lot of unique challenges.
I like that though, because it's something that, you know, you hear about people doing, like living on the road. And I've always thought, oh, that would be so great. And then you hear about some of the challenges that go with it. And I'm like, maybe, maybe not.
There are definitely some challenges. Yeah, it's totally worth it. But we definitely had to like sit in the coffee shop and like use our shitty Wi-Fi to like upload my book to Kindle. And it took like 3 hours.
Oh, wow.
You're just like, okay, I guess this is good. are loving it.
Oh, man, that's a lot.
I know, but 1210 would do it again. So
awesome.
I love that.
So you write romantic, contemporary romance, romantic suspense, mystery, that type of thing. Are there any tropes that you won't write?
I was thinking about this because I saw this. So I am not a fan of secret baby or surprise pregnancy because I do not want to be a mom ever. And that's my nightmare. Like having a surprise pregnancy is actually my idea of a living hell. So I do not like that. I don't really like boss employee doesn't really do it for me because like, unless it's a workplace setting, like Rival Radio where it's fun, like offices I find to be depressing hellholes. And so it's like really hard for me to like get like sexed up in like a, you know, office space environment. My mom is a teacher, and so teacher student is a no. Because even like, do you guys remember that horrible movie that did not age well, Never Been Kissed, with Drew Barrymore? Yeah. So I remember like people were like so into it when I was in high school, and I was like, but he's her teacher because like my mom's a teacher. I couldn't go there personally.
So I was a high school teacher for years, and then we homeschooled the kids, and I taught at an independent school, and been teaching karate. I've had students my entire life, right? And it is one of those things. I think I've read one. There's been one teacher student novel that I've read that I loved. And that was Dear Mr. Brody, A.M. Johnson.
She's amazing.
He's college and he's a college professor. And not only is the student in college, but he's post-military in college. So I kind of able to like say, okay, that's not teacher student. But yeah, I am like the teacher student has a little bit of an ick factor for me as a former teacher and current teacher. So I'm kind of like, if that's your jam, hey, that's totally, I'm not going to yuck your yum. That is totally okay.
Oh, totally.
But yeah, for me, especially first starting to read romance, I was like, I don't think I can read that. That's very uncomfortable for me. So knowing your limits, knowing your boundaries, and you're saying, nope, I can't read that. I can't write that.
Yes. Yes. And it all just depends on like, who you are. So like, for example, like it's hard for me to personally get into like why I choose romances only because as a queer person, my instinct is for everyone to be in love. So like, and why I choose a lot of times, like, and I didn't realize this because like my brain, like literally will not, I'm like too gay. Like my brain like won't be like, oh, but then wouldn't you all like be in love with each other? But like, usually I think it's like, they're all just in love with like the main person, but not with each other.
That is common in a lot of why choose. Yes.
It's like a math problem that doesn't compute. I'm like staring out the window trying to like figure it out, right? Like but also it's like I know so many people, like that's a fantasy, right? Where it's like you're the focus, they're there like for you, like kind of like waiting on you, serving you. So I totally like the fantasy makes so much sense to me. It's just like it doesn't work with my sexuality. So like it's just sometimes it's like a, you know, square peg in a round hole situation where it just won't do it for me personally.
That's the beauty of the variety in novels, is that you can find what works for you.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And that everyone can kind of like uplift all these things as like all the different options where there's like sweet romance or Amish romance or like why choose, or like I love monster romance. I know that's not everyone's jam, but I personally love a tentacle monster myself. So I know there are some people who could never read it, but I love it. I love it.
I was pissed off when the beast turned human. So I'm just going to put that out there right now.
Love a beast.
I was totally pissed off before I even read romance novels. I was pissed off that the beast became human, but
exactly. I love it. But I know like I've had plenty of people be like, I could never read monster romance. Like it's disgusting. And I'm like, that's totally cool. I totally like, it doesn't really, it doesn't feel personal to me. It's just basically like your kind of like your makeup, your personal makeup. Yeah.
So as a follow-up, that's what you wouldn't write.
Mm.
Is there a trope or storyline that you're just like jonesing to write?
Like what am I slut for? Yeah, there's a lot. I mean just from reading my books, you guys know I love enemies or rivals because of my Mulder and Scully background. So I love rivals. I like opposites attract, which to me I think can kind of feel like enemies, because I like when characters, you know, like Edward and Roxy have like nothing in common, but they actually have so much in common. I think there provides a lot of intimacy there when they have to dig through their perceived differences, which I personally love. I love fake dating and marriage of convenience, especially in like I love fantasy romance. I love sci-fi romance, historical romance, and like they do really well in those worlds because they kind of make a little bit more sense in like fantasy or historical. I know that friends to lovers can get a bad rap, but I love friends to lovers.
I do too.
Yeah, I think my last couple of books, I just realized a lot of them have been friends to lovers because I think there is an intimacy there that like you're building on, so that when you meet them, they're not like meeting for the first time. They have like history. It's why I also love Second Chance, which I know is like kind of controversial. There are some folks who like won't do it. To me, there's like an intimacy, and you know, it's Rowan and Charlie. So it's like, man, you meet this person and like you're the one who was at his hospital bed when he like hurt his arm, you know, like he called you instead of calling his grandmother. Like that to me is that's romance. That to me is most, more romantic than anything else, is like you were there for me when I was hurt. We've known each other so long that I like know all your little tics. I know all your little things that you love. I don't know. I think it's like so sexy, but I know that it's not a lot of people's jam. So I don't
That's
know.
One of my favorites.
Is it? I
love when people find that they figure it out when that switch clicks and they're like, okay, so it was here all along. We just had to get over our own personal bullshit and get past the what if and what if and what if, and to discover that there's that huge connection. It's one of my favorites. So
I love that you write that. Like one of them has always, like, for example, like the Rowan in the situation, who's like, oh, I've kind of been obsessed with you this whole time. No biggie if you're not, but I would die for you.
Yes.
Jake, every time you smile at me, I die.
I love that. I love that moment of that click. And so it's really powerful.
Yeah. I know, like Faith and I always say, like, we're here for like idiots to lovers, like two dummies who are just like,
they fight it or they ignore it. I'm just gonna ignore the feelings I have, because what if they're not reciprocated? I'm gonna ignore the feelings I have because we're too close. I'm gonna ignore the no, stop ignoring that. It's when they grow up, you know, you can see it. Mm-hmm. It's that moment of them becoming not so childish anymore and realizing, okay, this is how we can behave together and really have a good life together. But
I love it.
We've talked about a lot of things, and I know we're close on time. So I want to just ask you two really quick things, maybe we'll see. If you could give a brand new indie romance author one piece of advice, because I work with a lot of brand new authors, and they're always asking, what advice do you have? And I'm like,
one piece of advice about making their experience the best it can be based on your experience, what advice would you give them?
I would say patience and courage. So the courage piece in terms of like being fearless, like I was thinking about this with some of the other questions you guys had asked me, which is basically like some of the things that I don't worry about as much, like as I used to, is like being worried that some readers like won't like my books versus when I first started, you know, you're constantly obsessed with like your reviews or like how people see you. And the example I'm going to use is like unlikable heroines, which I'm putting in quotation marks for a reason. So I tend to write what some people would call unlikable heroines. So like Serena from Out of the Blue is a perfect example. She's a big wave surfer. She's muscular. She's strong. She's strong emotionally. She's strong physically. She's like kind of snarky. She stands up for herself. Like a lot of times, like those women are hated on by other women because of the patriarchy, because of internal oppression. Like these are very complicated issues. Like I understand why it happens, but you know, I'm certainly no stranger to receiving reviews that are like, your heroine's a bitch, or I wish she was softer, or like whatever that might be. And so when I was younger, I would work really hard to make my heroines fit in with what I thought was the community thought was likable, until I realized that actually if people don't like it, it's actually totally fine. Like, just don't read me, because I'm never going to write the heroine that you want. You know, like that's just not possible. I have to become a different person entirely. And so that's one thing that like, it does take time. I don't think that like with your first book, you feel fearless, but I think over time you start to realize that like trusting your voice, trusting what you know is a good story, and that like you don't have to make everyone happy because it's just absolutely impossible. And don't read your reviews. Don't read your
reviews. Never, ever, ever read your reviews if you're an author. Ever, ever, ever.
No.
Ever. Burn Goodreads, yeah.
Right.
And I think like the patience piece is just that kind of what I was saying, where it's like there is no shortcut. So like, you know, I wrote what, 4, 5, 6 books before I really started to gain traction. And like before then, you're kind of like releasing to like an empty stage, and you're releasing for one person, maybe 3 people. You're making, you know, $5 a month, $6 a month, you know, for a little bit in the beginning. I've definitely received, you know, messages from folks asking for like ways to get past that, which makes sense. It's really a frustrating time. There is no way to get past it. A lot of the journey in the beginning is really lonely, and you're kind of just writing for yourself. But the more you build your backlist, the stronger you get as a writer. Like that's how you have success. Like it takes, you know, I've seen authors say like 8, 9, 10 books before they really felt like they saw their career change. Yeah. So there isn't like a shortcut. I know there's always like one person who like hits number one on their debut, but like I always think there's other stuff going behind the scenes there. And also like,
yeah,
there's always one person, but that's really not, I don't know how you guys feel about that, but I always feel like that's very rare.
It is extraordinarily rare. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When you think about publishing in general and all the books that are out there and what people go through, yeah, there's going to be a unicorn occasionally,
right,
that is going to fly to the top with, you know, whatever reason.
Right.
Sometimes they stay there. Sometimes they're, I always go back to like 80s music with the one hit wonders.
Right.
And that happens with the book world too.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that consistency and persistence and believing in yourself, that's a huge part of it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's scary. You have to really like have a strong internal compass, because you're constantly going back to like, why am I here? What am I doing? Keep your eyes on your own paper, right? Like that's, yep. Comparison is the thief of joy. Like I have a post-it note right here that says comparison kills creativity.
Yes.
Because it does.
So
I still
much.
Do it all the time. You know, I'm a human lady, so.
We're humans. You know? We're always going to compare, but having that reminder is really powerful, especially from someone who writers can look up to and say, you know, I want to be where that person is. Mm-hmm. I want to do what that person's doing. And then hearing, look, it took me X number of years, X number of books. I still cry when I get my edits back. I still think every first draft, second draft, fifth draft is shit. I still, hearing that is a very powerful message.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Powerful. Yeah, absolutely. And then every release is different. I've had releases where I felt really good. I've had releases where like I really felt disappointed, and like really disappointed for a long time. Each release is, and sometimes it has nothing to do with rank. It's just whatever my expectations were. Like a good example I've told other friends is like with Blue Water, obviously those books, I mean, I hit whatever the top 16 or something. It was an absolutely insane prospect for me at the time. I was such a small author. And then I released the last two books of Codex after that. And like series never sell as well. You know, it was like the second and third book in the series. And so I don't think I even broke the top 300. And I only say that because like, that's actually amazing. But because I had just been number 16, I was like, oh, wow, I guess my career is already over. Oh my God, I'm sorry. I only say that. That's like so vulnerable to say, but like I only say it because like you will have the most unhinged things going through your head when you're a writer that's like, say goodbye to your career. Yep. That's actually really amazing.
Yes. Ignore the noise and ignore the everything and just enjoy the process of it and accept that you're going to be pissed off occasionally and frustrated and felt left down. And you know what? Kick it to the side, get over it, cry me a river, build a bridge and get over it, right? And then just kind of move on. So
that's kind of the only option.
That is the only option. It's like continue writing or quit. Well, I don't want to quit. You're gonna continue writing. So what's just do the things. All right. So what's next? What's next for you? What's coming up?
Well, you might have heard I have a novella coming out in 3 weeks, called Keep You Both. It is as an MFF bisexual romance about a wedding planner who falls in love with the couple that she's planning a wedding for. But they happen to be her best friends. She's always loved them. And they get stuck in a cabin over New Year's Eve weekends. And maybe they want her too. So
I love that.
Mm-hmm, it's really fun. It's well, I got a really nice message from LJ because she just finished it. And she was like, I know that it is like meant to be smutty and dirty and fun, but she was like, it's really emotional and it has a lot of like joy in it, which was, I mean, that's kind of my brand. It's really sweet. It's only like 38,000 words. So like when you guys get it, you'll read it in an hour, but I think it'll be a fun ride. So
I love
looking forward to it.
God, so looking forward to it.
I'm really
I told LJ, totally jealous.
The best though.
Yeah. Good novella at the end of the year when you're kind of stressed out and needing something kind of like joyful and full of serotonin. And I also casually am writing an MM bodyguard romance now. So
cool.
Yeah.
Julie and I are like,
I'm writing another bodyguard romance. I know. Well, I was reading, I love bodyguard romances, and I was reading Painted Daisies, which everyone should read. It's LJ Evans's series. It's amazing. And whenever like the third one, whenever like Leah and Holden are, which is Bodyguard Secret Service, I went feral over it. And I was like, girl, you have to write another one. So I'm writing a bodyguard romance. So.
Oh my God, I can't wait. That is like all right up my alley. So that is so exciting. I am looking forward to the novella. November is like my novella month. So I always look to read a bunch of novellas. So I'm really looking forward to that one. And I told LJ I'm completely jealous that she got to read it already. And I'm like,
yeah, she and Avery read it. They both read it in like a day. I was not expecting them to message me. I was shocked.
But that's the beauty of a novella is I know I can just go there and sit down and say, everybody, the world is off.
Yes.
Leave me alone. I am reading this and I am reading it the whole thing now. So that's why I love novellas. So we're going to do a quick speed round. So this is just a this or that. Don't think too hard. And we're just going to buzz them through. All right. Julie, you're up first.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Gilmore Girls or Ted Lasso?
Gilmore Girls.
Hard rock or country?
Oh.
Dumb down the third question.
Hard country, I guess.
hard country.
I love Dolly Parton, so there we go.
Perfect.
You can beach, say
or, the beach or mountain vacation?
Mountains.
Plan ahead or live in the moment?
I like to plan to live in the moment.
Okay. Morning person or night owl?
Oh, super morning.
Cookies or cake?
Cookies.
Sweaters or hoodies?
Hoodies.
Draft or edit?
Draft or edit? Oh, like writing a first draft or revising? Probably draft.
And Kindle or paperback?
Paperback.
Ooh, paperback. I love it.
I love paperback.
That was painless, right?
I love this or that.
Me too. Like, you know, you little connections with some of these things where you're like, oh, she likes to go to the mountains. I like to go to the mountains.
Agree. Yeah.
Fun little way to end. But gosh, anything else you wanted to let readers know about you, about your books, about your journey, anything we didn't cover
that you want to chat about?
No, I mean, I'm super grateful to be here. I love romance. I love this community. I think it, like we talked about, it has saved all of us. And I have a reader group called Catherine Nolan's Hippie Chicks. And if folks want to come hang, it's a pretty like joyful, very like special very place that a lot of folks really enjoy. And I would say I'm mostly on Instagram at Catherine Nolan Romance. That's where I kind of do most of my posting. And I love Instagram. I love Instagram. So like, you'll see me on there like way too often. And then I also have a newsletter that goes out weekly where I kind of will share more like book reviews and things that are happening more personally. So I would say those are the places to kind of see what I'm up to. But my novella comes out on November 17th. It'll be free in Kindle Unlimited. And then the standalone bodyguard romance that I'm writing will come out probably in May, also to Kindle Unlimited. So. Oh,
wow. Mm-hmm. And you'll be in Charmed in April.
Absolutely.
Yes. And we can't wait. April. We can't wait.
Everyone come see me. I should have copies of Keep You Both. So
that would be fantastic. Mm-hmm. And lots of copies of all these beautiful books, because that is one thing. Your covers are just stunning. And I know you're recovering a lot of the earlier ones, and I love them. So we'll put links to all the things. Julie is fantastic at gathering links to all the things, and we'll have them posted so that people know exactly where to find you. They can get their fill of Walter pictures because he is so freaking adorable.
He's the love of my life.
so cute.
He's the love of my life, and I am his feeder. So that's our relationship. I get it. Dinner, but he's the love of my life.
I get it. I totally get it. As the dog snores next to me again. This is becoming a habit with her. So at least she's not gassing me out of the room this time. But thank you so much for joining us. This was so fantastic. We really appreciate it. And I can't wait to hug you in April.
Hell yeah, it's going to happen.
It's going to happen. The tackle hugs are, I think Charm is going to become famous for tackle hugs. So we're...
I support that completely. I'm a huge hugger. Yes, please.
Unless you're Susie. Susie's like...
Unless you're Susie. Susie somehow has gotten more calm about it.
Oh, okay.
Yay! We're going
to come to the dark side, Susie.
We have cookies and hugs. So, Catherine, thank you so, so much for being here with us.
I so appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for giving us your time.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate you.
Oh, we appreciate you, too.